here real quick. You're listening to True Wealth, your tangible assets advisor. I'm Kevin, the host. True Wealth is sponsored by Coins Plus in Spokane. We're your full-service rare coin and precious metals broker-dealer depository service. We specialize in wealth and capital preservation or building portfolios, precious metals-based assets, buying and selling all forms of gold and silver and other things, other precious metals. We specialize in rare coins, numismatic items, collections, estates, all that. Right now, you know, and we also buy scrap gold, jewelry, and diamonds. We have great diamonds at great wholesale prices, folks. And if you're into that or somebody else you know needs a diamond for a wedding or something, have them come and see us. We have access to a tremendous amount of rings and things like that. We don't do the custom work. You can have that done, but it's just so expensive, and there's such good products out there now. We deal in a lot of made in the USA, really phenomenal, beautiful things, solid as a rock that lasts. A lot of people don't understand when, I mean, customization is extremely expensive, and you really do end up with a less than type of a product. We get people coming in a lot with, you know, a ring that they've had forever, and they just keep trying to fix it. Because the lady obviously has a severe emotional attachment to that ring. It means everything to her. She doesn't want to give it up. She feels sacrilegious if she does. If it makes you feel any better, my wife and I were in that position as well. I eventually just upgraded her into some more beautiful things. She could keep that ring, and then just upgrade to, you know, where you're at that point. We sell diamonds at wholesale, lower than anywhere else you'll ever look. We grade to GIA strict specifics, which is the harshest, most stringent grading standards. There's no fudging or games. And our pricing is drastically lower than anywhere else. Most of the volume-based jewelry stores you go to are selling an inferior product. When you want a nice diamond and they finally bring it out, the price gets hefty. And you'll find that ours are a third of what theirs are typically. It's just what we do. So, and I would also throw in, Coins Plus has been around 20-some years. We're a high-volume, low-margin dealer. We've had the motto, honesty, integrity, and professionalism in every transaction since our inception. That's been what we've strived to do. We really tried to bring a different approach to this industry based on the experiences I had as an avid collector. Collectors are a vulnerable audience. When you really love coins and you like them and you want them, and they're not like one thing, you know, now the Mint, U.S. Mint started producing a bunch of things in mass, you know, and they've just absorbed a huge amount of capital out of the market. It's had impacts on other parts of the market. You know, they'll make these really interesting coins that are gold or silver, but they make so many of them, there's no hope of them ever being collectible. And mintage is everything. It's a supply and demand game. And, you know, overall, there's so many items out there that people get caught up in early on with the, you may not know what I'm talking about, but these certification companies, you know, they'll grade all these new modern coins, MS or proof 70. The grading standard goes from 0 to 70. 70 is perfect. And people think, oh my gosh, it's perfect. Yeah, well, when you look at the census or the population reports of certified coins, it's getting to the point where these newer coins, like 85% of them that come off the mint, are perfect. They are grading 70s. 14% will grade 69s, and then there will be a straggling group that doesn't make that, and it's usually because they've been mishandled by people and they end up impaired. So you're a lot better off if you're balancing yourself out. You either, you know, you go the bullion route or you do a numismatic route, or, you know, we've got semi-numismatic or a blend of all three. That's what I recommend mostly, is having a nice balance of all three. Things change. I mean, right now, precious metals are difficult to locate and the premiums are very solid. They're very, you know, they're up. It looks like, you know, you're paying over the spot price of silver a fair amount, but at the same time, it's probably the real spot price because so much of the market's been shut down by this whole thing. And I'm just saying, it's very important at this time, I think, to get yourself into the hard assets. Some people are like, What do you think's going to happen to gold? Down or up and up? Definitely up. But the thing is you're going to get short-term fluctuations. The real goal is long-term, like I said, wealth and capital preservation. As we head into this new, this is a new realm. This is a new bowl, if you will, of plagues or whatever that are threatening the foundation of the United States of America. The United States of America stands for freedom and liberty. We've had the impact on the earth of no other nation. We've been the first nation that fights, hypothetically, for civil rights and truth and justice, and we don't conquer and acquire. How do we do that? Unfortunately, through this extraordinary runaway deficit called fiat currency or Federal Reserve Bank. But we have been the watchman on the block, if you will. Countries who've really tested us and pushed us too far have not always met their, you know, not always come out as well as they hoped. They've met their demise. We've made mistakes. And I think we're doing that more and more. Many people I know that are well-versed in the Middle East militarily, they'll come right out and tell you that taking out Saddam was a mistake. And people are like, oh, he was an evil man. Well, look at his body count and look at ours. And whether he was or not, it's a certain culture. You know, it's a gang. It's a sovereign nation run by a gang leader. And if gangs were sovereign, you know, who needs to run them? I mean, sad to say, who needs to run countries like Mexico or the drug cartel? You know, they need someone that's cut from their cloth. It's not that I'm condoning the behavior, but it is the culture, and you have to adapt to the culture. And it's Islamic, and it's the clan system. And anyway, we went in and took out Saddam. You know what we've done to one of the most beautiful countries and the oldest, you know, countries and cities in the world. And then you go through the Gaddafi. The death was terrible. I mean, the guy, you know, sure, they made him look crazy, but he was taking care of Al-Qaeda for us. He'd signed a treaty for us. He was protecting oil. He was doing all kinds of things for us. And Hillary went and took him out. Why? I think behind the scenes, what had happened was they said, we want your weapons, because Obama wanted to spike the pot for what eventually became ISIS. And that's why Benghazi was so inexplicable, why there'd be 61 CIA agents in an annex 6 to 12 blocks away, whatever it was, that would not come to the scene. And then they were calling, having everybody stand down when they wanted to come and protect our ambassador and our soldiers that were fighting this mess, because they were busy transporting the weaponry. Remember, Benghazi's in Libya. They were transporting the weaponry and artillery and over to Syria. This is factually documented, during this exact event. That's why we had our eyes off of this. And it was something Obama was up to. Later on, we're told, oh, you know, all these ISIS soldiers have American weapons and American tanks and you know, and all this stuff. They say that stuff that our military just left behind in Iraq when we pulled out. Not. We don't do that. That would just be, there's a number of reasons why that would not work. You know, so we had that, you know, the Hosni Mubarak removal, et cetera. Those are things where we've abused our power. We went into an area to a 4,000-year-old bee's nest, hornet's nest, after 9/11. 9/11, I personally believe, you know, there was some of the actors involved that were told, some of these terrorists, but there was so much more being orchestrated around them. They were little pawns in a Ponzi scheme, in a huge scandal, and there's so much documentation on that, but it's unpatriotic to say that. Well, right now, what is it unpatriotic to say? Right now, it's unpatriotic to say that the same thing might be going on with the COVID virus. First of all, you know, Mark Zuckerberg came out this weekend and said that Facebook is censoring anyone who attempts to plan or organize any kind of a protest through Facebook, a protest of the COVID virus. And, you know, there's this thing called the First Amendment. It's kind of scary. This stuff, folks, everything is culminating to an important point. Are we at a point where we're ready to do what we need to do to stand up against this stuff? We've had protests about the lockdowns. The governors just poo-poo it, and they brush it off, and they ignore it, and they minimize. The media doesn't give us fair coverage. I mean, if you think about the, you know, the triangle, we've got the liberal government, we got the media, and then we've got, well, the more than the media, we have the social media. And the biggest problem is we've got the social media like Facebook. They are the largest, probably, them and Google. They're the two largest conduits of freedom of speech. The First Amendment to the Bill of Rights says, Congress, and you guys know this, but it's always good to read, Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, or abridging freedom of speech, right, or the press, or the right of the people. Here's the key one. Or the right of the people peaceably to assemble. Why would they want to assemble? Oh, that's in here too. To petition the government for a redress of grievances. So here's what we have. We have a private organization that can kind of control speech. It really gets difficult because as an employer, I can control a lot of things people do in the workplace. I can control what they wear, for the most part, what they say, whatever. But I cannot take away their civil rights. I can't discriminate against them for race, you know, religion, etc., gender, you know, the gig. I cannot take away your First Amendment rights to free speech. I can have personal boundaries in my own business, but at the same time, what's happened with Facebook is the interaction is not with Facebook. The interaction is with others. That's freedom of speech. They're a conduit, and now they're engaging in the largest censorship in history. Google's, I've discussed this over and over. You cannot get a good organic search on anything out of Google. I mean, people, I'm telling you, what, like if you want to, this is a side jump, but if you're coming in to invest, don't think that you're doing research online. I mean, you might go, oh, what's for sale out there? But when you start to read all the stuff people write about what's good and what's bad, and when you get people that are ignorant in this industry, in order to do what we do, you know, you essentially accumulate the equivalent of a series of PhDs in knowledge with rare coins and things like that. But it's not that difficult if it's your passion and you love it and you've got the mind for it. And you'll get some of those outfits that they just can't do it. They jump in. When you get people that jump in, and I've seen that over the years, they jump in, they want a quick buck out of this business. They don't really believe in what they're selling, but they sell it anyway, and they want, you know, they think that they're, you know, joining the anti-establishment or whatever, and they start pitching stuff. They're gone. They always last a while, and then they're gone. We've been around 25 years, never had any litigation or anything like that. No one, you know, we treat our people right. We do the right thing. But we, you know, specialize in what we do. We know what we're doing. We love what we're doing. And we do build nice portfolios, and we help people do well. Right now, it is so critical that you protect and preserve your wealth. Because of these things going on, I don't know where this is going to end up. You know, it says Congress shall make no law abridging the freedom of speech. Well, in other words, the freedom of speech is an established right. They can't stop it. Their job, on the contrary, is to protect it. It's the president's job, the top cop in the nation. It's our law enforcement's position. We're seeing law enforcement around the nation overreacting to this thing. We've got, like I said, this censorship thing coming down. This is serious stuff. And no one's addressing it properly. I don't know why. Because they're so big. I've mentioned, if you're in in D.C., I keep wanting to call it the Washington Square, but where you see Lincoln on one end and the Washington Memorial on the other, and you got Monticello and the White House. And over in the corner, and I don't have my directions exactly right, but I remember asking a guy, what's that building? He says, that's the Google building. It's like the most visible building closest to the national park there is. So now Google is almost a fixture in our nation's tradition. That tells you they got a lot of power. And that might be why none of these guys are willing to stand up to them for long. They'll come out and speak this and speak that, and then they quiet down and go away. Google's got rumored, I think, or maybe established, it was billions of dollars. I've heard everything from 3.4 to 5 point something a year. Can't even imagine. But they can buy anybody off at any time. So they're controlling that. And then you got Mark Zuckerberg. He's got so much influence. If you control information flow to one another, it's and plus you combine that with confirmation bias, which just feeds the masses and feeds the populace, we are facing one of the most critical threats in the history of the world, perhaps. It's kind of like, what did God do at the Tower of Babel? Man had gone through the flood. And interesting, God carries man through things. He doesn't remove them from them. You've got, Noah, and we've got Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and things like that. So we've got, a history of, then we get to the Tower of Babel. And so anyway, God carries Noah through the flood. Man is repopulating the earth. Nimrod's in charge. Apparently not a good guy. And there's a lot of extraneous books out there, biblical books, that confirm he was a tyrant. And there was a lot of things that he was doing bad. So what they decide to do for some reason is build this massive, massive, massive structure that's going to reach to the heavens. All the way from Josephus Flavius or Flavius Josephus to a lot of the early writers, they're claiming, it was in the plains of Shinar, and they have had excavations that make no sense. I saw a show years ago that was incredible. They dig up this wall that's just endless. It just goes on and on and on and on, miles and miles and miles and miles and miles straight one way. Well, according to a lot of the old stories, this thing was a lot bigger than anything we would ever fathom. I mean, it would make the World Trade Centers look like, little tiny irrelevancies. So they decide to build this massive structure to the heavens. And what does God do? He says, if they unite, they can accomplish anything they want. We also get where he says, let us go down and confuse their language. And then we get into people say, well, that's the Holy Spirit's with him. Well, when does he refer to the Holy Spirit as a cohort? The Holy Spirit is his spirit. It is an entity. It is some sort of a being on a certain level, but it's not a communicative being with God per se. He doesn't speak of it as a separate assistant. So I don't know what the let us go down is. I have theories on that I won't get into here. But he says, let us go down and confuse their language, right? So he goes and he plugs up the language. He changes it. He creates these random languages, and then it talks about, and I can't remember exactly where I read it, but you can imagine the confusion in trying to construct this thing. Everything falls apart. It starts to come, it doesn't work, and then he scatters us abroad. Well, isn't that in a sense what is happening now. You got two combinations. One, at the Tower of Babel, God said, if they unite, they can accomplish anything they seek out or desire. Now we've got the unity, global unity of the media, you know, the press, the liberal movement, kind of the anti-God thing, which I'm pretty much guessing the Tower of Babel probably wasn't exactly a holy event. So we've got this confusion of our language. In other words, we can't get what comes out of our minds and mouth across to other people because we have to use these public conduits like Facebook and Google to get the information out, and they're shutting it down, and somehow they've got this immunity. It's a new thing. The argument is, oh, they're a private corporation. They can do whatever they want. But these are not, number one, when you get to a certain size, I mean, would we be fair to argue there's a major antitrust issue already with Facebook and Google? I mean, they could shut the world down. They can kill communication off quickly. And they can turn, and you don't know what editing and censorship they're doing, when, where, and why. You hear about people complaining. They'll never tell people why they were censored. They just give them some generic thing. I wrote a response one time to a political situation, and I used the word Nazi in it. I said they call us Nazis. They banned my entire write-up, which was substantial. It was good. It was well-written. But the truth was, it was very conservative in nature, and they just flat blocked it. I got some weird message. I didn't even know what it meant. Nothing I could do or say is what I've heard. So this, we've got this going on. We've got this grand scheme going on. Then today, I catch wind that Michelle Obama is a likely candidate for vice president with Biden. Okay? To me, folks, that is probably the most intelligent, threatening choice Biden could make. If there's one person in the world that I think as a VP candidate for Biden could potentially take a run at Trump, it's Michelle Obama. Why? Well, everyone loves Michelle, even though some think she's a man. Everyone loves Michelle for various reasons, okay? I have my own opinions, maybe not everyone, but lots of people. And she's the wife of the Messiah, you know, the Holy One that the liberals love to death, the man with the silver tongue. We know that Joe Biden is senile and nuts. We know that Michelle Obama is very brilliant and very bright. Obama's a brilliant guy. He made it crystal clear that he would not endorse Biden until it was way too late. Biden was the candidate. No more, you know, he's not officially the nominee, but soon. No more contestants, basically. Then Obama comes out this last week and says, hey, you know, I chose Joe Biden as my VP candidate. It's one of the best decisions I ever made. I discussed that on my last show. I think basically, yeah, I'm sure it is, because he didn't know enough. He wasn't smart enough to give you any threats or challenges, and he probably just kind of rode the wave the way a good VP should, I guess. You know, but he didn't stand up and say he's incredibly talented. I heard Al Gore today saying, you know, if anybody asks me who they should vote for in the next election, he says, you know, I tell them, this is not complicated. And that's the end of his comment. And he was talking to Joe Biden when he said that. He said, I tell him, this is not a complicated decision. Okay? But he doesn't say anything pro-Joe Biden. He gives this really nice political statement. People don't have faith in Joe Biden. I've spoken to liberals where I'm like, you don't want Joe Biden. And they'll just look at you or get real quiet. They won't say no or yes. They're just like, it's kind of the anything but Trump. So now you get Michelle Obama. She's brilliant and a heck of a speaker. Be ready. She'll be dominating this thing. I mean, I'm almost, You know, or if Biden doesn't make it a couple years, now we have President Michelle Obama. Well, of course she's going to have a really good advisor who's been in the office for two terms. His name's Barack Hussein Obama. Wouldn't that be the way to get that third term in? Isn't it interesting? That's what Hillary was trying to do. Isn't that interesting? I mean, it's like there's these dynasties that get formed in politics on both sides. You got the Bush dynasty. They were so angry when Trump knocked Jed off. They to this day, they hate his guts. Can't stand him. And Jed came out in public, you know, during the debates and just, you know, he just made himself look like a fool because you could just see his vitriol towards Trump. And he would try to, you know, to verbally street fight with a man who was a professional verbal street fighter. And that does not work. And now we're going, if this is true, and I can't imagine it's not, I think the rumors flying, and from his perspective, that would be the single best decision he could make. I mean, she's, you know, people think, well, if something happens to Biden, we're covered. They think that she's very competent. And there's, you know, rumors circulating from people I've talked to today that Obama did not endorse Joe Biden until the very end. And in return for endorsing him, he made Biden choose, soon to choose, Michelle as his VP candidate, which is possibly why a while ago, this might not be a new concept, a while ago, you know, Biden said, well, if he chose a candidate, it'd be a woman. Well, he was probably either, I'm sure he didn't think of it, but Mr. Barack probably did. And that's why he said, you know what, you win this thing on your own, and then we'll do this. For some reason, Obama didn't want to put his name on him, probably in case he lost, which he should have, if there was any good candidates, and Obama would have already thrown the ball in. And you can't, you know, you lose credibility. And he's obviously been around the politics game. So if this goes down, their hypothetical is that Michelle would be the great leader, the great speaker, the great anti-Trump, and, you know, anti-whatever else too, very possibly, who knows. But she would be a great speaker and, sadly, to the left, a great leader. And we would be back under Obama's reign, terrifying. So they throw this whole thing out there at Trump. You know, it's interesting. As you look back now and put it together, Obama has threaded through all of this. You go back in time to, you know, we were testing this SARS virus. The original testing through the NIH and genetic sequencing began under a grant from Obama in, I believe, maybe 2012 or 13. Then Obama at that time started to interact with Gates more. And they were up to no good. And I remember by a few years back, people saying, why would Bill Gates be investing $2 billion at the time of his own money into vaccination and immunology research and all that? And then we had this under the grant that Obama formed for the NIH. They started to do this SARS testing. SARS is the COVID-2 or COVID-19 coronavirus. It's a SARS virus, which now Bill Gates has the patent on through Perbright Corp, which is also the company that has the patent on all the testing kits, which he had ready to go within a day of this thing breaking out. But we get Obama, he pushes that grant through for Bill Gates and for, you know, the research and the Chinese, essentially. The Chinese were involved. They had Chinese scientists working on this stuff at the University of North Carolina. Eventually, the NIH came in after Obama got out. Interesting, right? Obama in 17, they came in, maybe late 16 they started, or I'd be no 17, and they said this is too dangerous, and they shut it down. And at that point, Bill Gates uprooted the Chinese scientists and went to Wuhan, where he funded and built the Wuhan lab, the largest, most proficient biological testing center in the world. Oh, well, again, Bill Gates paid for it, funded it, built it. He's in tight with the Chinese. He won a whole bunch of their highest honors and scientific awards for it. And he was, you know, operating over there. And then what happened? So now we've got that Obama thread and the Gates connection. And then we get, last fall, early last fall, we get the event 201, where they bring everyone together. All the, you know, leaders of the WHO, the CDC, all these people, the FEMA, all the National Institute of Health, and then there's someone else. But anyway, that's where, like, Fauci, Dr. Fauci is influenced from as well. So they get these people all together, and they do a simulated release of the coronavirus to show them how realistic it is and what a pandemic looks like. And then they educate these leaders in the national health organizations and international. They educate them on how to respond to a pandemic and how serious it is and how this coronavirus can spread. I mean, seriously, folks, this is, you know, now the momentum's going, the ball's rolling. So what comes after that? Now, so now he's educated those in powerful positions, in relevant positions, in positions of influence and control. Because, you know, it's, you can have the president in control, but who's talking to him? That's where the power is, right? Then phase two of this, then, I mean, phase two is not the proper term. It might be phase eight. I don't know. But then Obama and Gates come out with this pandemic docuseries, which covers coronavirus outbreak. And just as that movie's peeking out on Apple or whatever it's on, HBO is what it was, just as it's peeking out, oh no, the coronavirus gets released right as that movie's in stride. But it gets released, we still, you know, arguably don't know how. But when it did get released, the Chinese government was aware of it. We have documentation they were aware of it in November. And they don't tell the CDC until January 21st, after the disease is on a roll. Okay, but there's another phase to this. It's called PsychOps. Okay. I had a gentleman in here last week who is a retired Fulbright colonel, and he has experience with a lot of this kind of stuff, biological stuff, and he was telling me that all the information he's getting from the inside is that they believe this was absolutely a biological attack orchestrated by China, you know, anti-Trump, everything, and that we just can't say that because we have to be prepared to go to war. So you get this event 201, you've got this pandemic video, you've got this disease breaks out exactly the way they predict. They have created the event 201, taught our leadership. Pandemic series teaches the people how to respond and react, or I should say overreact and over-respond. And then out comes this disease. 2 months head start. Somehow, you know, this Nancy Pelosi and these guys are rashing on Trump for not doing things right. I mean, folks, there's times and places for that. That is the most destructive, inappropriate, negative spirit. You know, I've talked on the show about the difference between critical thinking and a critical spirit. That is a terribly critical spirit. And it's not even genuine. It's not even sincere because you can't fault the guy. Within 10 days of the first outbreak, Trump was shutting down the travel from China before anyone knew what was going on. There's a lot of evidence that he knew it was a biological release or weaponry for whatever reason. He may have even known, because he had a look, he may have even known that it was really directed towards him. And he may have had some very brilliant people putting facts together, showing him the lineage and chronology of these events to make it apparent that the timing was set up as we roll into the election year 2020. So now we get this thing rolling. We do the psychops, which is another thing that Colonel was talking to me about. And the military is obviously very good at it, and they've done a lot of experimentation with the transfer of literature to countries that are going to either get occupied or where our military is going to come in and execute operations, and they want to notify the people, and they drop all kinds of information and food and water bottles or classics where they put propaganda paraphernalia around them. And they've tested this out where they've gone all the way from, hey, we're your friends, we're bringing in a lot of gifts, and we want to make show you how great we are, to fear. Well, fear, they've said, people just surrender under fear. So they know those are psychops. So what happens? China comes out with these videos that are unbelievable. I don't know if you've watched them. You know, they're yanking people out of their homes. They're acting like this is... It's like a movie. It's like some kind of horror film where they're locking, nailing people in their houses with plywood to starve to death because they don't want them to get out. They're dragging people away. Guys in hazmat suits are dragging people away and throwing them in paddy wagons and never to be found again. You've got all kinds of scientists that were involved with this. Gone, never to be returned. Why? Did they know more about what was coming? Yeah, probably. China operates this way. They're not clean operators. But most of all, they have videos of people flopping in the streets like fish, just dropping dead. You know, they got videos of guys, you know, just laying in the street with a black blanket over them. This is nothing new in propaganda, folks. All the way back from Nazi Germany up. I mean, we've got... Hamas and Hezbollah and the Gaza Strip falsifying all kinds of videos whenever they get into activity with Israel. And then years back, a CNN reporter who, thank goodness, was honest, pointed out that they had the same actors in multiple carnage videos where they're supposedly dragging injured individuals off on gurneys. Well, the CNN reporter spotted the same guy in three different events. So we know creating these falsified videos is not an uncommon thing or hard to do. People aren't that dumb, folks. They're pretty smart. You start to give people who are smart and have experience and have access to whatever they want because of their financial well-being... They can do crazy things. I think 9/11 was highly orchestrated at a level you can't even comprehend by the People for a New American Century. Bill Gates is the longest standing deca billionaire ever. He's had over, get this, you know how they say six figures, okay? A six-figure income means you make $100,000 or more. You say seven figures, that's a million or more. Eight figures, tens of millions. Nine figures, hundreds of millions. 10 figures, a billion. Well, Bill Gates has been worth 11 figures pretty much for 30 years, longer than any other human being. So he's a long time to take a lot of money and find a lot of ways to be Dr. Evil, especially with his extremely left-wing slant. I don't know why. The Bible is very clear about rich men, you know, have a real hard time getting into heaven and whatnot. They rely on their riches, but especially when Christ says you can't worship God and mammon. You can't serve two masters. Mammon means the man-made spirit of money. or man-made money spirit is what it means. It means I'm God. I did it myself. I'm a self-made man. Bill Gates is tapping on $100 billion in net worth right now. That's not too shabby. And most of your calculators can't even do that. I don't know what bank you keep that money in, but that'd be a little bit dangerous, I think. So anyway, so as soon as this outbreak hits, after the psychops that took place from China, they taught us how to respond. Event 201, pandemic, psychops. Now we know. We got to freak out. We don't know anything about this thing, but it's going to be so dangerous. It breaks out. Then we freak. Then it becomes political. Everything's anti-Trump. You've got guys, you know, today I was thinking about it. You realize Andrew Cuomo, the mayor of New York, went after Trump for a number of things, just falsely, a total sham. Went after him because they didn't have enough ventilators. And he goes, you tell me who's going to die. You know, you can choose those people and all this garbage. They were supposed to buy these ventilators years ago. They did buy some, not nearly enough. And then they sold them later in auction and don't know who they sold them to. It's their responsibility. It's their responsibility. It's a mayor's responsibility to protect a city. It's a governor's responsibility to protect a state. And it's the president's responsibility to protect the United States of America. If they're ill-prepared, it's not Trump's fault. So when he comes in to help, it should be thank you so much, not like you owe me more, you owe me more, and this kind of a thing. And so today I was thinking about the fact that Trump quickly solved this respiratory thing. He commandeered all these major, I should say recruited, these huge manufacturing organizations, General Motors and whatnot, Ford, and then he got Ford and GM competing with each other. All of a sudden, done. We got more ventilators we know what to do with. Oh, we didn't need them. The pandemic wasn't what we were told it was going to be. Now we've got statistics coming out the last couple of weeks. First one that slipped out was that there, studies are showing that 85% of people that acquire COVID are asymptomatic. The next one that comes out, which, you know, you get the left just arguing, saying, oh, no, that's terrible. That means we have super spreaders. It's not what it should be. It's like, hey, this is really mild. This is not near what they've purported it to be. But no, we have super spreaders. Now we got to lock down harder. Then we get the Stanford study this last weekend that comes out and says that there's 50 to 85 times the cases out there that we suspected. Well, at that point, your mortality rate goes to zero, which makes influenza far more destructive, right? And you might say, well, there's a ton of deaths, you know, from this COVID virus. Well, I'm not so sure I would agree with you on that. A lot of the statistics, you know, the way I've discussed, they're using the way that they're determining statistics. This is not scientific or correct at all. And just to, you know, recap real quick, as of April 14th, CDC case counts and death counts include both confirmed. These are called new CDC guidelines. They both confirmed and probable. What? Probable cases and deaths from COVID. And then they're, you know, and they basically have it, a confirmed case or death is defined by meeting confirmatory laboratory evidence for COVID-19. In other words, a test, verifiable test. A probable case of death is defined by meeting clinical criteria and epidemiological evidence with no confirmatory laboratory testing performed for COVID-19 or meeting presumptive laboratory evidence. There's no such thing. And either clinical criteria, clinical means anecdotal, okay? Clinical means it's not scientific, it's just opinions. Clinical, so they basically have presumptive laboratory evidence, which is a nice long professional word for assumptive, assuming, and either clinical criteria, opinion, or epidemiological evidence, meaning, well, did you know somebody with COVID? Did you get near them? Did you see them? Did they sneeze down the road from you while the wind was blowing your direction? And do you know someone you think had COVID? You know what I mean? It's all opinion. It's over, folks. This is not science. It's gone. Or meeting vital records criteria with no confirmatory laboratory testing performed. Vital records criteria. Well, he had a fever, and he was really sick, and he had to have COVID. This is what the reports are. They are racking up death reports on this, folks, that are so far over the top. I would bet you that only at most 10% of the reported deaths are truly COVID. And I don't have time to cover that today, and I've done a lot of research today on it. Too much. 10% max of what's been reported. Max. The rest of it is liberal coup. It's a socialist coup. We're losing our freedom of speech. We're being controlled. This was the great experiment. It's a political coup. They're doing everything to set up Obama to come into office. Yes, Barack will be there with Michelle. Be prepared. You better be ready to cast that vote. I don't want to hear anybody say, well, I don't agree with everything that Trump does. I mean, either. But I do disagree with everything Obama does. And I don't need a wife of a Muslim. I guess it doesn't matter, but another Muslim, so you got the point, right? Be wise. Be prepared. Get yourself prepared. As believers, we need to be prepared anyway, as wise humans. Financially, I would be secured. You saw what happened to metals when Obama was in office last time. We've got a humongous financial tsunami coming. There is no quantifiable way to determine the impact of this long term, but it is going to get ugly. Everybody wants, you know, skipped mortgage payments, which is technically default, like never before. We're going to hit the highest unemployment rates ever. I mean, folks, this is going to get ugly. I'm sorry. I don't want this. I'm just being honest with you. If you're not secured in hard assets and, you know, we're going to have hyperinflation, hyperinflation will artificially show the market up. But we have another correction coming. And if it wasn't for hyperinflation, if you do an inflation adjustment based on the deficit, it's crazy what, you know, the loss of the spending power. And these little pittance checks they're throwing out, yeah, they're neat, but they don't cover any of these, I mean, businesses or anything like that. So you really should secure yourself. I'd also ask for, you know, some reviews. If you guys have done business with us and you can give us some 5-star reviews on like Google, Yelp, and I always forget the other ones, but you can figure it out. Do 3, Facebook, and they give us a call, verify them, and we'll give you 2 nice Morgan dollars. And that's a great value right now, by the way. So I believe that this thing is coming apart at the seams. I think that it's going to be like 9/11. It's going to be brushed under the rug because if you speak up, you're evil, you're anti-patriotic, you want people to die. Think about it. In 9/11, you speak up, hey, this is fishy, it doesn't make sense. Oh, you're friends with the enemy. That's treason. Well, that's almost the same thing they're doing here, folks. This is round one. You know, they're going to try to get in office. I pray to the Lord they don't. But you add in all the corruption, the collusion with China that I think has been happening here, folks. You're in the middle of one of the greatest fiction novels in history, real novels in history. And like I said, look at the Tower of Babel, scatter their language. You got Mark Zuckerberg on board, Google's on board, 408 visits the Obama administration. Put it together. And then last, you got Gates wanting to do the world global one-size-fits-all vaccination with a nanoparticle in it. Fact. So thank you for tuning in. Keep your eyes open. Be wise. Seek the truth. Seek wisdom. God will give it to you if you want it. Take care. God bless. Bye-bye. Have a great night.